The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samatho. සබ්බෝපදීපටි නිස්සග්ගෝ තණ්හක්ඛයෝ විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාණං. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 17th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbāna. In our last sermon, we tried to analyze some discourses that give us a clue to understand what sort of an experience an arahant has in his realization of the cessation of existence in the arahat phala samadhi. We happen to mention that the arahant sees the cessation of existence with a deeply penetrative vision of the void that may be compared to a gaze that knows no horizon. We also dropped the hint that the non-manifestative consciousness, endless and lustrous on all sides, we had spoken of in an earlier sermon, is an explicit reference to this same experience. How the arahant, ranging in his triple pasture of the signless deliverance, the undirected deliverance and the void deliverance, animitta vimokkha, appanihita vimokkha and sunyata vimokkha, gets free from the latency to perception, transcends the duality of form and formless, and crosses over this ocean of existence unhindered by Mara, has been described in various ways in various discourses. Let us now take up for discussion in this connection three significant verses that are found in the Iti Uttaka. Yecha rupupaga satta yecha arupatthayino nirodhaṁ appajānanta āgantāro punabhavaṁ. ఏచ రూపే పరిజ్ఞాయ అరూపేషు అసంఠిత నిరోధేయే విముచ్యంతి తే జన మచ్యుహాయినో. కాయనామతం ధాతుం పుసయిత్వా నిరూపధి ఉపధిపటి నిస్సగ్గం సచ్చికత్వ అనాశవో దేశేతి సమ్మా సంబుద్ధో అశోకం విరజం పదం. దోస్ బీయింగ్స్ దట్ గో టు రెల్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫోమ్ అండ్ దోస్ హు ఆర్ సెటిల్డ్ ఇన్ ఫోమ్లెస్ రెల్మ్స్ నాట్ అండర్స్టాండింగ్ ద ఫ్యాక్ట్ ఆఫ్ సెసేషన్ come back again and again to existence. Those who, having comprehended realms of form, do not settle in formless realms, are released in the experience of cessation. It is they that are the dispellers of death. Having touched with the body the deathless element, which is assetless, and realized the relinquishment of assets, being in flux free, the perfectly enlightened one proclaims the sorrowless, taintless state. The meaning of the first verse is clear enough. Those who are in realms of form and formless realms are reborn again and again due to not understanding the fact of cessation. In the case of the second verse, there is some confusion as to the correct reading. We have mentioned earlier too that some of the deep discourses present considerable difficulty in determining what the correct reading is. They have not come down with sufficient clarity. Where the meaning is not clear enough, there is a likelihood for the oral tradition to become corrupt. Here we accepted the reading asanthita. Yecha rupe parinyaya arupesu asanthita. Those who, having comprehended realms of form, do not settle in formless realms. But there is the variant reading susanthita, which gives the meaning settled well. The two readings contradict each other, and so we have a problem here. The commentary accepts the reading asanthita,
We too followed it for some valid reason and not simply because it accords with the commentary. However, in several modern editions of the text, the reading Asantita has been replaced by Susantita, probably because it seems to make sense prima facie. But as we pointed out in this series of sermons, there is the question of the dichotomy between the form and the formless. The formless or arupa is like the shadow of form, rupa. Therefore, when one comprehends form, one also understands that the formless too is not worthwhile settling in. It is in that sense that we brought in the reading Asantita in this context. Those who have fully comprehended form do not depend on the formless either, and it is they that are released in the realization of cessation. They transcend the duality of form and formless, and by directing their minds to the cessation of existence, attain emancipation. In the last verse, it is said that the Buddha realized the relinquishment of assets known as Nirupadhi, the assetless. It also says that he touched the deathless element with the body. In a previous sermon, we happened to quote a verse from the Udana, which had the conclusive lines, Pusanti phassa upadhin paticca nirupadhin kena puseyum phassa. Touches touch one because of assets. How can touches touch him who is assetless? According to this verse, it seems that here there is no touch. So what we have stated above might even appear as contradictory. The above verse speaks of a touching of the deathless element with the body. One might ask how one can touch when there is no touch at all. But here we have an extremely deep idea, almost a paradox. To be free from touch is in itself the touching of the deathless element. What we mean to say is that as far as the fear of death is concerned, here we have the freedom from the pain of death, and in fact the freedom from the concept of death itself. The Buddha and the Arahants, with the help of that wisdom, while in that Arahatapala Samadhi, described as Anasava Cheto Vimutti Panya Vimutti or Akuppa Cheto Vimutti, let go of their entire body and realize the cessation of existence, thereby freeing themselves from touch and feeling. That is why Nibbana is called a bliss devoid of feeling, Avedaita Sukha. This giving up, this letting go, when Mara is coming to grab and seize, is a very subtle affair. To give up and let go when Mara comes to grab is to touch the deathless, because thereby one is freed from touch and feelings. Here then we have a paradox. So subtle is this thumb. How does one realize cessation? By attending to the cessation aspect of preparations. As we have already mentioned, to arise and to cease is of the nature of preparations, and here the attention is on the ceasing aspect. The worldlings in general pay attention to the arising aspect. They can see only that aspect. The Buddhas, on the other hand, have seen the cessation of existence in a subtle way. The culmination of the practice of paying attention to the cessation aspect of preparations is the realization of the cessation of existence. Bhava or existence is the domain of Mara. How does one escape from the grip of Mara? By going beyond this range of vision, that is to say, by attending to the cessation of existence, bhava nirodha. All experiences of pleasure and pain are there so long as one is in bhava. The arahant leads to the freedom from form and formless and from pleasure and pain, as it was said in a verse already quoted. Atha rupa arupa cha sukha dukkha pamuchyate. And then from form and formless and from pleasure and pain is he freed. We explained that verse as a reference to Anathapada Samadhi. Here too, we are on the same point. The concept of the cessation of existence is indeed very deep. It is so deep that one might wonder whether there is anything worthwhile in Nibbana, if it is equivalent to the cessation of existence. As a matter of fact, we do come across an important discourse among the tenets of the Anguttara Nikaya, where Nibbana is explicitly called Bhavanirodha. It is in the form of a dialogue between Venerable Ananda and Venerable Sariputta. As usual, Venerable Ananda is inquiring about that extraordinary samadhi. සියානුකෝ ආවුසෝ සාරිපුත්ත භික්ඛුනෝ තථාරූපෝ සමාධිපටිලාභෝ යත නීව පඨවියං පඨවි සංඤ්ඤස්සන ආපස්මින් ආපෝ සංඤ්ඤස්ස න තේජස්මින් තේජෝ සංඤ්ඤස්සන වායස්මින් වායෝ සංඤ්ඤස්ස න ආකාසානං ඡායතනේ ආකාසානං ඡායතන සංඤ්ඤස්ස න විඥානං ඡායතනේ විඥානං ඡායතන සංඤ්ඤස්ස නාකින් සංඥායතනේ අකින් සංඥායතන සංඤ්ඤස්සන නේව සංඥානා සංඥායතනේ නේව සංඥානා සංඥායතන සංඤ්ඤස්ස න ඉදලෝකේ ඉදලෝක සංඤ්ඤස්ස න පරලෝකේ පරලෝක සංඤ්ඤස්ස සංඤ්ඤේච 50 කුත්‍යාපි ෆ්‍රෙන්ඩ් සාරිපුත්ත ෆෝර් මන්ක් සත්‍යෙන් ඇටේන්මන්ට් ඔෆ් කන්සන්ට්‍රේෂන් වෙරින් හි විල් නොට් බී කොන්ෂස් ඔෆ් ඇර්ත් ඉන් ඇර්ත් නෝ ඔෆ් වෝටර් ඉන් වෝටර් නෝ ඔෆ් ෆයර් ඉන් ෆයර් Nor of air in air, nor will he be conscious of the sphere of infinite space in the sphere of infinite space, nor of the sphere of infinite consciousness in the sphere of infinite consciousness, nor of the sphere of nothingness in the sphere of nothingness, nor of the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception in the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, nor of this world in this world, nor of a world beyond in a world beyond, and yet he will be conscious. Venerable Sariputta's reply to it is, there could be friend Ananda. Then Venerable Ananda asks again, but then friend Sariputta, in which manner could there be such an attainment of concentration for a monk? At that point, Venerable Sariputta comes out with his own experience, revealing that he himself once attained to such a samadhi, when he was at Andhavana in Savatthi. Venerable Ananda, however, is still curious to ascertain what sort of perception he was having when he was in that Samadhi. The explanation given by Venerable Sariputta in response to it is of utmost importance. It runs, Bhava Nirodho Nibbanam Tikho Meyauso අඤ්ඤාව සංඥා උප්පජ්ජති අඤ්ඤාව සංඥා නිරුජ්ජති සේථාපි ආවසෝ සකලිකග්ගිස්ස ජායමානස්ස අඤ්ඤාව ආච්චි උප්පජ්ජති අඤ්ඤාව ආච්චි නිරුජ්ජති එවමෙව කෝමේ ආවසෝ භව නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාණන්ති අඤ්ඤාව සංඥා උප්පජ්ජති අඤ්ඤාව සංඥා නිරුජ්ජති භව නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාණං සංඤේච 50 ආවසෝ තස්මින් සමේ ආවසෝ. One perception arises in me, friend. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. And another perception fades out in me. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. Just as, friend, in the case of a twig fire, when it is burning, one flame arises and another flame fades out. Even so, friend, one perception arises in me, cessation of existence is Nibbana. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. And another perception fades out in me, cessation of existence is Nibbana. Cessation of existence is Nibbana. At that time, friend, I was of the perception, cessation of existence is Nibbana. The true significance of the simile of the twig fire is that Venerable Sariputta was attending to the cessation aspect of preparations. As we mentioned in connection with the formula etang santang etang panitang, this is peaceful, this is excellent, occurring in a similar context, we are not to conclude that Venerable Sariputta kept on repeating cessation of existence is Nibbana. The insight into a flame could be different from mere sight of a flame. Worldlings in general see only a process of burning in a flame. To the insight meditator, it can appear as an intermittent series of extinctions. It is the outcome of a penetrative vision. Just like the flame, which simulates compactness, existence too is a product of sankharas or preparations. The worldling who attends to the arising aspect and ignores the cessation aspect is carried away by the perception of the compact. But the mind, when steadied, is able to see the phenomenon of cessation. Thetam cittam vipamuttam vayam chassanupasati. The mind, steadied and released, contemplates its own passing away. With that steadied mind, the Arahant attends to the cessation of preparations. At its climax, he penetrates the gamut of existence made up of preparations, as in the case of a flame, and goes beyond the clutches of death. As a comparison for existence, the simile of the flame is quite apt. We happened to point out earlier that the word upadana can mean grasping as well as fuel. The totality of existence is sometimes referred to as a fire. The fuel for the fire of existence is grasping itself. With the removal of that fuel, one experiences extinction. The dictum Bhavanirodho Nibbanam clearly shows that Nibbana is the cessation of existence. There is another significant discourse which equates Nibbana to the experience of the cessation of the six sense bases, Salayatana Nirodha. The same experience of realization is viewed from a different angle. We have already shown that the cessation of the six sense bases or the six sense spheres is called Nibbana. The discourse we are now going to take up is one in which the Buddha presented the theme as some sort of a riddle for the monks to work out for themselves. Tasmātiya bhikkave se āyatane veditabbe yattha cakkuncha nirujjati rūpa sanyāca virajyati se āyatane veditabbe yattha sotancha nirujjati sadda sanyāca virajyati se āyatane veditabbe yattha ghānancha nirujjati ghandha sanyāca virajyati se āyatane veditabbe yattha jīvhāca nirujjati rasa sanyāca virajyati se āyatane veditabbe yattha kāyocha nirujjati potthabba sanyāca virajyati se āyatane veditabbe yattha manocha nirujjati dhamma sanyāca virajyati se āyatane veditabbe se āyatane veditabbe. Therefore, monks, that sphere should be known wherein the eye ceases and perceptions of form fade away. That sphere should be known wherein the ear ceases and the perceptions of sound fade away. That sphere should be known wherein the nose ceases and perceptions of smell fade away. That sphere should be known wherein the tongue ceases and perceptions of taste fade away. That sphere should be known wherein the body ceases and perceptions of the tangible fade away. That sphere should be known wherein the mind ceases and perceptions of mind objects fade away. That sphere should be known. That sphere should be known. There is some peculiarity in the very wording of the passage. When it says, for instance, that the eye ceases, cakkuncha nirujjati, and perceptions of form fade away, rupa sanyata virajyati. As we once pointed out, the word viraga, usually rendered by detachment, has a nuance equivalent to fading away or decoloration. Here that nuance is clearly evident. When the eye ceases, perceptions of forms fade away. The Buddha is enjoining the monks to understand that sphere, not disclosing what it is, in which the eye ceases and perceptions of form fade away. And likewise, the ear ceases and perceptions of sound fade away. The nose ceases and perceptions of smell fade away. The tongue ceases and perceptions of taste fade away. The body ceases and perceptions of the tangible fade away. And last of all, even the mind ceases and perceptions of mind objects fade away. This last is particularly noteworthy. Without giving any clue to the meaning of this brief exhortation, the Buddha got up and entered the monastery, leaving the monks perplexed. Wondering how they could get it explained, they approached Venerable Ananda and begged him to comment at length on what the Buddha had preached in brief. With some modest reluctance, Venerable Ananda complied, urging that his comment be reported to the Buddha for confirmation. His comments, however, amount to just one sentence. Salayatana nirodham ko auso bhagavata sandhaya bhasita. Friends, it is with reference to the cessation of the six sense spheres that the exalted one has preached this sermon. When those monks approached the Buddha and placed Venerable Ananda's explanation before him, the Buddha ratified it. Hence it is clear that the term ayatana in the above passage refers not to any one of the six sense spheres, but to Nibbana, which is the cessation of all of you. The commentator, Venerable Buddha Ghosa too, accepts this position in his commentary to the passage in question. Salayatana nirodhanti salayatana nirodho ucchati nibbana tam sandhaya bhasitanti attho. The cessation of the six sense spheres. What is called the cessation of the six sense spheres is nibbana. The meaning is that the Buddha's sermon is a reference to it. The passage in question bears testimony to two important facts. Firstly, that Nibbana is called the cessation of the six sense spheres. Secondly, that this experience is referred to as an ayatana or sphere. The fact that Nibbana is sometimes called ayatana is further corroborated by a certain passage in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, which defines the term Nekkhammasitta Domanassa. In that discourse, which deals with some deeper aspects of the Dhamma, the concept of Nekkhammasitta Domanassa, or unhappiness connected with renunciation, is explained as follows. If one contemplates with insight wisdom the sense objects like forms and sounds as impermanent, suffering fraught and transient, and develops a longing for Nibbana, due to that longing or expectation, one might feel an unhappiness. It is such an unhappiness which, however, is superior to an unhappiness connected with the household life, that is called Nekkhammasitta Domanassa, or unhappiness connected with renunciation. How such an unhappiness may arise in a monk is described in that discourse in the following manner. Kudassu namaham tadayatanam upasampajya viharissami yadariya etarahi ayatanam upasampajya viharantiti anuttaresu vimokhesu pihang upatthapayato uppajyati pihapachya domanassam. Yang evarupam domanassam idam ucchati nekkhammasitta domanassam. Oh, when shall I attain to and dwell in that sphere to which the noble ones now attain and dwell in? Thus, as he sets up a longing for the incomparable deliverances, there arises an unhappiness due to that longing. It is such an unhappiness that is called unhappiness connected with renunciation. What are called incomparable deliverances are the three doorways to Nibbana, the signless, the undirected, and the void. We can therefore conclude that the sphere to which this monk aspires is none other than Nibbana. So here we have a second instance of a reference to Nibbana as a sphere or ayatana. Now let us bring up a third. Athibhikkhave tadayatanam yattha neva patavi na apo na tejo na vayo na akasanam chayatanam na vinyanam chayatanam na akinchanyayatanam na neva sanyana sanyayatanam na ayan loko na paraloko na ubho khandima surya tatrapaham bhikkhave neva agatim vadami na gatim na thitim na chutim na uppattim appatittam apavattam anarammanam evetam esevanto dukkhasati. Incidentally, this happens to be the most controversial passage on Nibbana. Scholars, both ancient and modern, have put forward various interpretations of this much vexed passage. Its riddle-like presentation has posed a challenge to many a philosopher bent on determining what Nibbana is. This brief discourse comes in the Udana as an inspired utterance of the Buddha on the subject of Nibbana, Nibbana Patisamyutta Sutta. To begin with, we shall try to give a somewhat literal translation of the passage. Monks, there is that sphere wherein there is neither earth, nor water, nor fire, nor air, neither the sphere of infinite space, nor the sphere of infinite consciousness, nor the sphere of nothingness, nor the sphere of neither perception, nor non-perception, neither this world, nor the world beyond, nor the sun and the moon. There, monks, I say, is no coming, no going, no staying, no passing away, and no arising. It is not established, it is not continuing, it has no object. This itself is the end of suffering. instead of getting down to the commentarial interpretation at the very outset, let us try to understand this discourse on the lines of the interpretation we have so far developed. We have already come across two references to Nibbana as an ayatana or sphere. In the present context too, the term ayatana is an allusion to arahat phala samadhi. Its significance therefore is psychological. First of all, we are told that earth, water, fire and air are not there in that ayatana. This is understandable since in a number of discourses dealing with anidassana vijnana and arahat phala samadhi, we came across similar statements. It is said that in anidassana vijnana or non-manifestative consciousness, earth, water, fire and air do not find a footing. Similarly, when one is in arahat phala samadhi, one is said to be devoid of the perception of earth in earth, for instance, because he does not attend to it. So the peculiar negative formulation of the above Udana passage is suggestive of the fact that these elements do not exercise any influence on the mind of one who is in arahat phala samadhi. The usual interpretation, however, is that it describes some kind of a place or a world devoid of those elements. It is generally believed that the passage in question is a description of the sphere into which the arahant passes away, that is, his after-death state. This facile explanation is often presented only as a tacit assumption for fear of being accused of heretical views. But it must be pointed out that the allusion here is to a certain level of experience of the living arahant, namely, the realization here and now of the cessation of existence, bhava-nirodha. The four elements have no part to play in that experience. The sphere of infinite space, the sphere of infinite consciousness, etc. also do not come in, as we have already shown with reference to a number of discourses. So it is free from both form and formless. The statement that there is neither this world nor world beyond could be understood in the light of the phrase na idhaloke idhaloka sanyi na paraloke paraloka sanyi. Percipient neither of this world in this world nor of a world beyond in a world beyond, that came up in a passage discussed above. The absence of the moon and the sun na ubho chandima surya in this sphere is taken as the strongest argument in favor of concluding that Nibbana is some kind of a place, a place where there is no moon or sun. But as we have explained in the course of our discussion of the term anidassana vijnana or non-manifestative consciousness, with the cessation of the six sense spheres, due to the all-lustrous nature of the mind, sun and moon lose their luster, though the senses are all intact. Their luster is superseded by the luster of wisdom. They pale away and fade into insignificance before it. It is in this sense that the moon and the sun are said to be not there in that sphere. Why there is no coming, no going, no staying, no passing away and no arising can be understood in the light of what we have observed in earlier sermons on the question of relative concepts. The verbal dichotomy, characteristic of worldly concepts, is reflected in this reference to a coming and a going, etc. The arahant in arahat phala samadhi is free from the limitations imposed by this verbal dichotomy. The three terms appatittam, apavattam and anarambanam, not established, not continuing and objectless, are suggestive of the three doorways to deliverance. Appatittam refers to appanihita vimokha, undirected deliverance, which comes through the extirpation of craving. Appavattam stands for sunyata vimokha, the devoid deliverance, which is the negation of continuity. Anarambanam is clearly enough a reference to animitta vimokha, the signless deliverance. Not to have an object is to be signless. The concluding sentence, "This itself is the end of suffering," is therefore a clear indication that the end of suffering is reached here and now. It does not mean that the arahant gets half of Nibbana here and the other half there. Our line of interpretation leads to such a conclusion. But of course, in case there are shortcomings in it, we could perhaps improve on it by having recourse to the commentarial interpretation. Now as to the commentarial interpretation, this is how the Udana commentary explains the points we have discussed. It paraphrases the term ayatana by karana, observing that it means reason in this context. Just as much as forms stand in relation to an object to the eye, so the asankata dhatu or the unprepared element is said to be an object to the arahant's mind, and here it is called ayatana. Then the commentary raises the question, why earth, water, fire and air are not there in that asankata dhatu? The four elements are representative of things prepared, sankhata. There cannot be any mingling or juxtaposition between the sankhata and the asankata. That is why earth, water, fire and air are not supposed to be there in that ayatana. The question why there are no formless states like the sphere of infinite space, the sphere of infinite consciousness, the sphere of nothingness, the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception is similarly explained, while asserting that Nibbana is nevertheless formless. Since in Nibbana one has transcended the sensuous sphere, Kamaloka, the concepts of a this world and a world beyond are said to be irrelevant. As to why the sun and the moon are not there, the commentary gives the following explanation. In realms of form, there is generally darkness, to dispel which there must be a sun and a moon. But Nibbana is not a realm of form, so how could sun and moon come in? Then what about the reference to a coming, a going, a staying, a passing away and an arising? No one comes to Nibbana from anywhere, and no one goes out from it. No one stays in it or passes away or reappears. Now all this is mystifying enough, but the commentary goes on to interpret the three terms appatittang, appavattang and anarammanam also in the same way. Only that which has form gets established, and Nibbana is formless. Therefore it is not established anywhere. Nibbana does not continue, so it is appavattang or non-continuing. Since Nibbana takes no object, it is objectless, anarammana. It is as good as saying that though one may take Nibbana as an object, Nibbana itself takes no object. So this is what the traditional interpretation amounts to. If there are any shortcomings in our explanation, one is free to go for the commentarial. But it is obvious that there is a lot of confusion in this commentarial trend. Insufficient appreciation of the deep concept of the cessation of existence seems to have caused all this confusion. More often than otherwise, commentarial interpretations of Nibbana leaves room for some subtle craving for existence, bhavatanha. It gives a vague idea of a place or a sphere, ayatana, which serves as a surrogate destination for the arahants after their demise. Though not always explicitly asserted, it is at least tacitly suggested. The description given above is ample proof of this trend. It conjures up a place where there is no sun and no moon, a place that is not a place. Such confounding trends have crept in, probably due to the very depth of this Dhamma. Deep indeed is this Dhamma, and hard to comprehend, as the Buddha once confided in Venerable Sariputta with a trace of tiredness. Sankhittena pikhovahang Sariputta Dhammang deseyam. Pitharena pikhovahang Sariputta Dhammang deseyam. Sankitta vittharena pikho vahang sariputta dhammang deseyyam. Anya taro cha dullabha. Whether I were to preach in brief, Sariputta, or whether I were to preach in detail, Sariputta, or whether I were to preach both in brief or in detail, Sariputta, rare those who understand. The Venerable Sariputta implores the Buddha to preach in brief, in detail, and both in brief and in detail, saying that there will be those who understand. In response to it, the Buddha gives the following instruction to Venerable Sariputta. Tasmati Sariputta evang sikhitabham. Imasmincha savinyanake kaye ahankara mamankara mananusayanya bhavissanti. Bhaiddhaja sabbanimittesu ahankara mamankara mananusayanya bhavissanti. Yancha cheto vimuttiṃ panyā vimuttiṃ upasampajya viharato ahankara mamankara mananusayanya hunti. Pancha cheta vimuttiṃ paññā vimuttiṃ upasampajya viharissāmāti evañhi kho Sāriputta sikhitabbam. If that is so, Sāriputta, you all should train yourselves thus. In this conscious body and in all external signs, there shall be no latencies to conceits in terms of eyeing and mind, and we will attain to and dwell in that deliverance of the mind, and that deliverance through wisdom, whereby no such latencies to conceits of eyeing and mind will arise. Thus should you all train yourselves. The Buddha goes on to declare the final outcome of their training. Ayam ucchati Sariputta bhikkhu accheccitantam vavattai sanyojanam samma mana abhisamya antamakasi dukkhasa. Such a monk Sariputta is called one who has cut off craving, turned back the fetters, and by rightly understanding conceit for what it is, has made an end of suffering. We find the Buddha summing up this exhortation by quoting two verses from a sutta in the Parayana Vagga of the Sutta Nipata, which he himself had preached to Brahmin youth Udaya. We may mention in passing that among canonical texts, the Sutta Nipata was held in high esteem, so much so that in a number of discourses, the Buddha is seen quoting from it, particularly from the two sections, Attaka Vagga and Parayana Vagga. Now the two verses he quotes in this instance from the Parayana Vagga are as follows. Pahanam kamachandanam domanasana chubhyam thinasacha panudanam kukuchanam nivaranam upekha sati santuddham dhamma takka purejavam anyabhimukham pabhrumi avijaya pabhedanam. The abandonment of both sensuous perceptions and unpleasant mental states, the dispelling of torpidity and the warding off of remorse, the purity born of equanimity and mindfulness, with thoughts of Dhamma forging ahead and blasting ignorance, this I call the deliverance through full understanding. This is ample proof of the fact that the Arhatapala Samadhi is also called Anyabhimokkha. Among the nines of the Anguttara Nikaya, we come across another discourse which throws more light on the subject. Here, Venerable Ananda is addressing a group of monks. Acharyanga auso, abhutanga auso, yavanchidang tena bhagavata janata pasata arhata samma sambuddhena sambadhe oka sadhigamu anubuddho sattanang visuddhya soka pariddhavanang samatikkamaya dukkha domanassanang atthangamaya Jaya sadhigamaya nibbanasa sachkiriyaya. Tadeva nama chakkum bhavisati te rupa tanchayatanam no patisamvedisati. Tadeva nama sotam bhavisati te sadda tanchayatanam no patisamvedisati. Tadeva nama ghanam bhavisati te gandha tanchayatanam no patisamvedisati. Sadha nama jivha bhavisati te rasa tanchayatanam no patisamvedisati. Soch naam kayo bhavishati te phuddabba tanchayadanam no parisamvedisati. It is wonderful, friends, it is marvelous, friends, that the exalted one who knows and sees, that worthy one, fully enlightened, has discovered an opportunity in obstructing circumstances for the purification of beings, for the transcending of sorrow and lamentation, for the ending of pain and unhappiness, for the attainment of the right path, for the realization of Nibbana. Inasmuch as that same I will be there, those forms will be there, but one will not be experiencing the appropriate sense fear. That same ear will be there, those sounds will be there, but one will not be experiencing the appropriate sense fear. That same nose will be there, those smells will be there, but one will not be experiencing the appropriate sense fear. That same tongue will be there, those flavors will be there, but one will not be experiencing the appropriate sense fear. That same body will be there, those tangibles will be there, but one will not be experiencing the appropriate sense fear. What is so wonderful and marvelous about this new discovered opportunity is that though apparently the senses and their corresponding objects come together, there is no experience of the appropriate spheres of sense contact. When Venerable Ānanda had described this extraordinary level of experience in these words, Venerable Udai raised the following question. Sanyimeva nukho avaso ānanda tadāyatanam nupati samvedhiti udāho asanyi. Friend, is it the fact that while being conscious one is not experiencing that sphere, or is he unconscious at that time? Venerable Ānanda affirms that it is while being conscious, sanyimeva, that such a thing happens. Venerable Udai's cross-question gives us a further clue to the riddle-like verse we discussed earlier, beginning with nasanya sanyi navisanya sanyi. It is indeed puzzling why one does not experience those sense objects, though one is conscious. As if to drive home the point, Venerable Ānanda relates how he once answered a related question put to him by the nun Jatilagahya when he was staying at the deer park in Anjanavana in Saketa. The question was, Yayam bhante ānanda samadhi na chabhinato na chapanato na cha sasankhara nigaiho aritavato vimuttatta thito thitatta santusito santusitatta no paritrasuti ayam bhante samadhi kim phalo vuttu bhagavata. That concentration, Venerable Ānanda, which is neither turned towards nor turned outwards, which is not a vow constrained by preparations, one that is steady because of freedom, contented because of steadiness, and not hankering because of contentment. Venerable Sir, with what fruit has the Exalted One associated that concentration? The question looks so highly compressed that the key words in it might need some clarification. The two terms abhinata and apanata are suggestive of lust and hate, as well as introversion and extroversion. This concentration is free from these extreme attitudes. Whereas in ordinary concentration, sankharas or preparations exercise some degree of control, as the term vikambana, propping up, suppression, suggests, here there is no implication of any forcible action as in a vow. Here the steadiness is born of freedom from that very constriction. Generally, the steadiness characteristic of a level of concentration is not much different from the apparent steadiness of a spinning top. It is the spinning that keeps the top up. But here the very freedom from that spinning has brought about a steadiness of a higher order, which in its turn gives rise to contentment. The kind of peace and contentment that comes with samadhi in general is brittle and irritable. That is why it is sometimes called kuppa paticca santi, peace subject to irritability. Here, on the contrary, there is no such irritability. We can well infer from this that the allusion is to akuppa ceto vimutti, unshakable deliverance of the mind. The kind of contentment born of freedom and stability is so perfect that it leaves no room for hankering, paritasana. However, the main point of the question posed by that nun amounts to this. What sort of a fruit does the samadhi of this description entail, according to the words of the Exalted One? After relating the circumstances connected with the above question as a flashback, Venerable Ānanda finally comes out with the answer he had given to that question. Yayam bhagini samadhi na chabhinato na chapanato na cha sasankhara nigaiha varitavato vimuttatta thito thitatta santusito santusitatta no paritasati ayam bhagini samadhi anya phalo utto bhagavata. Sister, that concentration which is neither turned towards nor turned outwards, which is not a vow constrained by preparations, one that is steady because of freedom, contented because of steadiness, and not hankering because of contentment, that concentration, sister, has been declared by the Buddha to have full understanding as its fruit. Anya, or full understanding, is one that comes with realization. conferring certitude, and it is the fruit of the concentration described above. Then, as if coming back to the point, Venerable Ananda adds, evaṁ saññīpi kho āvaso tadāyatanaṁ no patisaṁvedeti. Being thus conscious to offend, one does not experience an appropriate sphere of sense. So now we have garnered sufficient evidence to substantiate the claims of this extraordinary Arhatta Pala Samadhi. It may also be mentioned that sometimes this realization of the Arhant is summed up in a sentence like Anasavam Cheto Vimuttin, Panya Vimuttin, Ittheva Dhamme Sayam Abhijna Satchikattva Upasampajya Viharati. Having realized by himself through higher knowledge here and now, the intox-free deliverance of the mind and deliverance through wisdom, he dwells having attained to it. There is another significant discourse in the section of the force in the Anguttara Nikaya which throws some light on how one should look upon the Arahant when he is in Arahata Pada Samadhi. The discourse deals with four types of persons, namely 1. Anusotagami Puggalo, downstream bound person. 2. Patisotagami Puggalo, upstream bound person. 3. Thitatto Puggalo, stationary person. 4. Tinno Paragato Thale Tittati Brahmano, the Brahmin standing on dry ground having crossed over and gone beyond. The first type of person indulges in sense pleasures and commits evil deeds and is thus bound downstream in samsara. The second type of person refrains from indulgence in sense pleasures and from evil deeds. His upstream struggle is well expressed in the following sentence. Sahapi dukkhena, sahapi domanasena, asumukho pirudamano, paripunnang, parisuddhang, brahmacharyam charati. Even with pain, even with displeasure, with tearful face and crying, he leads the holy life in its fullness and perfection. The third type, the stationary, is the non-returner, who, after death, goes to the Brahma world and puts an end to suffering there without coming back to this world. It is the fourth type of person who is said to have crossed over and gone to the farther shore, Tinno Paragato, and stands there, Thaletit. The word Brahmin is used here as an epithet of an Arahant. This riddle-like reference to an Arahant is explained there with the help of the more thematic description, Asavanam Khaya, Anasavam Cheto Vimuttin, Panya Vimuttin, Ittheva Dhamme Sayang Abhinya Satchikattva Upasampajya Viharati. With the extinction of influxes, he attains to and abides in the influx-free deliverance of the mind and deliverance through wisdom. This brings us to an extremely deep point in our discussion on Nibbana. If the Arahanti Arahata Pada Samadhi is supposed to be standing on the farther shore, having gone beyond, what is the position with him when he is taking his meals or preaching in his everyday life? Does he now and then come back to this side? Whether the Arahant, having gone to the farther shore, comes back at all is a matter of dispute. The fact that it involves some deeper issues is revealed by some discourses touching on this question. The last verse of the Paramattaka Sutta of the Sutta Nipata, for instance, makes the following observation. Na kappayanti na purekkharanti dhamma pitesang na patichitase na brahmano silavatena neyo parangato na pachetitari. They, the Arahants, do not formulate or put forward views. They do not subscribe to any views. The true Brahmin is not liable to be led astray by ceremonial rites and ascetic vows. The such-like one who has gone to the farther shore comes not back. It is the last line that concerns us here. For the Arahant, it uses the term Tadi, highly significant term, which we came across earlier too. The rather literal rendering, such like, stands for steadfastness, for the unwavering firmness to stand one's ground. So the implication is that the arahant, once gone beyond, does not come back. The steadfastness associated with the epithet Tadi is reinforced in one Dhammapada verse by bringing in the simile of the firm post at the city gate. In the Kelopamo Tadi Subbato, who is steadfast and well conducted like the pillar at the city gate. The verse in question then points to the conclusion that the steadfast one, the arahant, who has attained supramundane freedom, does not come back.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible, free of charge, to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.